Senate will come to order. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Roll call for Wednesday, February 17th. Anderson.
Here.
Bebout.
Here.
Burns.
Here.
Case.
Here.
Coe.
Here.
Cooper.
Here.
Dockstader.
Here.
Elliott.
Here.
Esquibel.
Here.
Geist.
Here.
Sturt.
Here.
Honeycutt.
Here.
Jennings.
Here.
Johnson.
Here.
Landon.
Here.
Larson.
Here.
Martin.
Here.
Massey.
Here.
Meyer.
Meyer-S,
Nicholas,
here.
Perkins,
here.
Peterson,
here.
Ross,
here.
Schiffer,
here.
Scott,
here.
Sessions,
here.
Townsend,
here.
Von Platern,
here.
President Hines,
here.
30 present.
Prayer by the Reverend Bite.
After a moment of silence, I offer you a prayer for our local government. Let us pray. Almighty God, our Heavenly Father, send down upon those who hold office in this state, especially our senators, the spirit of wisdom, the spirit of charity, the spirit of justice, that with steadfast purpose they may faithfully serve in their offices to promote the well-being of all people. For it is in your name we pray. Amen.
Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We have had a little problem again with our speaking system, and the chief clerk just said when it turned green, we know something's wrong. So if I turn green, we'll have to wait a while. Will the reading clerk please read the Journal Committee of Report?
Mr. President, your Journal Committee reports that the Journal of February the 16th, 2010 has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Dockstader, Chairman.
Are there any objections? There being none, the report is adopted. Doctor of the day is Ron Mall, D.O. from Cheyenne, and the nurse of the day is Keisha Hansen from Ivinson Memorial Hospital in Laramie. Welcome. Thought for the day, challenges are what make life interesting. Overcoming them is what makes life meaningful. Senator Von Platern? Not yet? Okay. House bills in first reading. House Bill 12, first reading of the bill.
House Bill 12, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee, Juvenile Detention Facilities Admission Criteria, an act relating to juvenile detention. Passed the House on third reading, ayes 55, noes 1, excused 3, absent 1.
House Bill 12 is assigned to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. House Bill 13, first reading of the bill.
House Bill 13, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee, Underage Drinking, and Act Relating to Alcohol. Passed the House on third reading, ayes 47, noes 10, excused 3.
House Bill 13 is assigned to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. House Bill 20, 36, House Bill 36, first reading of the bill.
House Bill 36, Notaries, sponsored by Representative Gingery, and Act Relating to Notaries, passed the House on third reading, ayes 55, noes 2, excused 3.
House Bill 36 is assigned to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. House Bill 37, first reading of the bill.
House Bill Number 37, sponsored by Representative Gingery, Mandatory Judicial Retirement 2, and Act Relating to Judicial Retirement. Passed the House on third reading, ayes 52, noes 5, excused 3.
House Bill 37 is assigned to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. House Bill 17, first reading of the bill.
House Bill Number 17, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee, Carbon Sequestration, Financial Assurances, and Regulation, and Act Relating to Environmental Quality. Passed the House on third reading, ayes 52, noes 5, excused 3.
House Bill 17 is assigned to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. House Bill 16, first reading of the bill.
House Bill 16, sponsored by Representative Buchanan, Private School Licensing Exemption, and Act Relating to Private School Licensing. Passed the House on third reading, ayes 56, noes 1, excused 3.
House Bill 16 is assigned to Committee Number 4, Education. House Bill 2, first reading of the bill.
House Bill 2, sponsored by the Agriculture Committee, Veterinarians, and Act Relating to Veterinarians. Passed the House on third reading, ayes 56, no 0, excused 3, absent 1.
House Bill 2 is assigned to Committee Number 5, Agriculture. House Bill 26, first reading of the bill.
House Bill 26, sponsored by the Labor Committee, Medical Review Panel, and Act Relating to the Administration of Government. Passed the House on third reading in an amended form, ayes 55, noes 1, excused 3, conflict 1.
House Bill 26 is assigned to Committee Number 10, Labor. House Bill 32, first reading of the bill.
House Bill 32, sponsored by Representative Stubson, Board of Nursing Continuing Jurisdiction, an Act Relating to Professions and Occupations. Passed the House on third reading, ayes 57, excused 3.
House Bill 32 is assigned to Committee Number 10, Labor. Reports from standing committees. Just a second. Senator Von Platerman.
Thank you, Mr. President. May I have privilege of the floor?
You may.
Yesterday, the Community College Association in our state gave out awards for Best Faculty, Teacher, and Student of the Year. And behind us is one of the candidates for Student of the Year. Although she did not win the number one position on that, I told her to be one of the top seven students in our community college system is quite an achievement. So would the Senate please congratulate and welcome Nicole Vallecana, and she should be seated right behind us.
Welcome to the Senate, and congratulations on your award and position. Yes, Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. President. May I have privilege of the floor, please?
You may.
Last night, colleagues received a very nice award. For those of you who could not be there, I thought it might be appropriate to congratulate Senator Hastert, who was awarded an advocacy award from the domestic abuse group here in town. It was the first annual award, the Peace Award. You may have received a notice on your desks, and I thought we might want to all congratulate Senator Hastert.
Congratulations, Senator. Senator Larson.
May I have the privilege of the floor for a moment?
You may.
Many of you, I think, received a small notice, about half a sheet like this, that's in your pile. It looks like something that could get easily lost. So I want to remind everybody that the governor's prayer breakfast is next Friday, February 26th, and it begins at 7 a.m., and it's the traditional event that they have. If you received one of these, it's probably like I did. I haven't made my reservation yet. The cost is going to be $20. It will be at Little America. And they're urging anyone who wishes to attend with your spouses or family to please get your reservations in. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you for that reminder, Senator Larson. Reports from standing committees.
February the 16th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 48, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Massey, C. Meyer, Nicholas Peterson, Townsend, Senator Nicholas, Chairman. February 16, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 52, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Massey, C. Myers, Nicholas Peterson, Townsend, Senator Nicholas, Chairman. February the 17th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 12, Rules and Procedures, to whom was referred Senate File 53, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, Hines, Massey, Ross, and Sessions, Senator Hines, Chairman. February the 17th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 12, Rules and Procedures, to whom was referred Senate File 54, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, Hines, Massey, Ross, and Sessions, Senator Hines, Chairman. February the 16th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 39, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass, amended. Aye, Senator Massey, C. Meyer, Nicholas Peterson, and Townsend, Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
Bills on second reading.
Hey, pal.
Senate File 32, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 32, sponsored by the Labor Committee, Wyoming Investment in Nursing Extension, an act related. Oh, I'm going to have it back.
Senate File 32, there is an amendment. For the reading clerk, please read in the amendment.
Senate File 32, second reading amendment number 1, page 1, line 14.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 32. Mr. President, this is intended to warn the sunset date with our system of funding government. The problem that we had this year with the sunset date is not an option. If the government has been
discussion on the amendment. Ready for the question. Question B on second reading, amendment number 1 to Senate File 32. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Amendment passed. Senate File 32 having been read two times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Senate File 35, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 35, sponsored by the Transportation Committee.
There is amendment. Will the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
Senate File 35, second reading amendment number 1, page 9, line 10.
Senator Von Fladeren.
Thank you, Mr. Dew. Senate File 35. And what this does, fellow senators, goes to page 9, line 10. There was a discussion yesterday that when they should reduce the rates on the tolling after the main project has been completed, the main construction job. There was legislative control in this particular subparagraph. L, insert, recommend to the legislature, set, or actually after set on line 14, starting basically with line 15, you would put by the legislature. Instructions done. Money, starting on line 8, it says state highway fund monies transferred to the reserve. Commission shall recommend to the legislature to adjust toll rates on the project so the toll revenues and ongoing operation maintenance and necessary plan, the rate may be set by the legislature assistance program available to local governments. So it just puts the legislature in there, and I ask for your aye vote on this.
Discussion on the amendment. Does Senate File 35 pass? All in favor say aye. Senate File 35 having been read two separate. Senator Von Fladeren.
Mr. President, thank you. If we're on the bill, I'd just like to point out yesterday there was a question about the federal funding impacts, and if should we toll, how would this affect future? And so there is a report that it's on your desk. The gist of it basically reduced in a couple of, but the minimum level of federal funding is determined by USDOT under the program. Additional funds are allocated to state, each state, so that its total federal fund equals the greater of the two hold harmless provisions. And those hold harmless provisions are 92, this is on the second page of that handout, 92% of the state's contribution to the highway portion of the highway trust fund. Well, presently we get about 160% of our contribution to the federal highway fund. So I realize this is going out on the internet, but don't tell anybody. And the next possible hold harmless that we would qualify is the next bullet point, which says the state's share of total average annual apportionments during the 6 years of the TIA 21, which was the previous six-year appropriation from the federal government, provided state meets certain criteria. In other words, you'll never go below the preceding six-year rolling average. And so we get some docked on some of our funds, but since there's two hold harmless clauses and we qualify for one of them, our funds won't change, or minimally change. The last page that you were handed out will describe the diversion factor and the amount of money. If you look at the bottom chart on that page, it'll tell you that if you start in 2008 dollars at $30, and then by inflation as you complete projects and improve the highway, by 2025 it was all the way to $46, your diversion factor would be 4%, that's the third column. The average daily truck is 89, almost 9,000 trucks a day, which is the same as the next because we're not exempting if in this scenario, these are all future scenarios, that you'd have $149 million in revenue. That's what that's showing you. How much you charge, how much the diversion factor, what the estimated number of trucks on that highway would be, and what your gross income will be. Right next to it is a chart if you did cars, and it's the same thing for every $10, $20, $30. Here's your diversion. Here's the number of cars they expect on the road. Here's the gross amount of income you receive. And the gross income is based on the 2025 figure. You were charging that amount of money in 2025. And they're pretty enormous figures. So that's how they did diversion. That's what the expected income. That's the expected number of vehicles on the road in 2025. So if I can answer any other questions, I'd be glad to. And thank you for the time, Mr. President.
Senate File 35 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Senate File 36, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 36, sponsored by Senator Hines, Gillette Madison Water Project.
Senate File 36, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Senate File 50, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 50, sponsored by Senator Scott, Hospital Privileges.
Senate File 50, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Senate File 56, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 56, sponsored by Senator C. Meyer, Fuel Tax Bonds.
Senate File 56, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Senate File 62, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 62, sponsored by Senator Bebout, Veterans Burial.
Senate File 62, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Senate File 64, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 64, sponsored by Senator Scott, Safety Belt Violations 2.
There is an amendment. For the reading clerk, please read in the amendment.
Senate File 64, second reading amendment number 1, page 1, line 4.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 64. Mr. President, before taking my first time, I'll ask you to rule on the constitutionality of this amendment. There is a disagreement between the bill sponsor and me about whether this is a constitutional amendment. I'll give my case, and I'm sure the bill sponsor will want some time as well. It's my belief that it is constitutional, and I have talked with the LSO attorneys about it. And it's their thinking that it is as well. It does deal with some existing statute on page 2, lines 16 through 24 of the bill, but that is part of the original bill, and the purpose for removing it, indeed, is the part of that existing statute that the bill proposed to change. So I believe that since it is part of the bill, it was the sponsor who raised the topic and the subject, that it is indeed germane to the bill and therefore is constitutional.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, the issue is not germaneness. Mr. President, the issue is Article 3, Section 20 of the Wyoming Constitution. And very brief, let me read it. It says, no law shall be passed except by bill, and no bill shall be so altered or amended on its passage through either house as to change its original purpose. Mr. President, the bill as introduced increased the incentive for wearing your seatbelt. What it did was raised the amount you get off your fine from $10 to $25. Now, with the passage of the Standing Committee Amendment yesterday, we took it back to the existing law, which is to just leave the incentive at $10. What this amendment proposes to do is turn that 180 degrees around and eliminate the incentive, which would have, is contrary to the whole purpose of the bill, and would reduce the incentive for wearing seat belts. And so, while it may be germane, it is changing the original purpose because it's changed it completely from raising the incentive to eliminating the incentive. So, Mr. President, I would urge you to rule this out of order as being unconstitutional.
According to the Mason Legislative Manual, Chapter 52, Presiding Officer, it is not the right of the presiding officer to rule upon the constitutionality of bills, because that authority belongs to the House. and by the house we mean this body, as I interpret it. So that is up to this body to discuss, to as the attorney have relayed to me. You can either have a motion whether this bill is constitutional, or whether you just want to discuss the bill and use that in your decision. Senator Scott?
Mr. President, I think perhaps the better part of wisdom would then be to deal with the amendment, and I would urge us to vote it down because it's both a bad idea and unconstitutional.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. President. I assume that that was the senator from Natrona County's first time. And Mr. President, the reason I bring this issue up is that I came across some information in researching another bill back in the fall. And the information I uncovered is very much relevant to this part of the bill, and I wanted to bring it to the body for a policy decision. You'll see a handout that was placed on your desk earlier this morning that has my name up in the right-hand corner, Senate File 64, and it says Wyoming LSO Research Memo. And on it, on the top, is the date October 28, 2009. The research memo, well, taking a look at that, let me offer a little bit of an explanation. We can go through the memo. In conversations with the Wyoming Highway Patrol, it became evident that they didn't think that this incentive was really working anymore. In stopping and talking with folks that had had a moving vehicle violation, there was no indication, no knowledge that they could even get $10 off of their ticket by wearing a seatbelt. And so as a result, they said, you know, this is sort of a waste of money, and the legislature should take a look at it. And I asked them that question, Mr. President, during the budget hearings as well, and that was the testimony from the Wyoming Highway Patrol, is that their belief that this incentive doesn't work anymore. Okay, it really is not an incentive as the legislature had intended. So in taking a look at the research memo, the LSO has quantified that. Now, they don't know how much is discounted in this. Every year, this incentive costs the state of Wyoming $808,000. So I guess if you were to add in the municipal court, it's well over $1 million every year that we forego as a result of this incentive. So I bring this amendment for the body to consider eliminating this part of the statute, save us probably at least $808,000 a year for something that no longer works, and that eventually will go into our school system because that's where fines go.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President, on and against the amendment. One of the great stories, I've got a good friend, one of the great stories he tells me is as he came up to me once and said, how do you save $20 in 20 minutes? And I said, I didn't know. And then he related to me a pretty humorous story where he was picked up twice within 10 minutes trying to make it to a meeting that was essentially canceled when he got there. But, you know, it stuck in him, and the lead in that story is that it makes a difference. I mean, and there's two points to be made here. One is, to him, it sure made an impression on him about seatbelt usage, even though he tells in the context of a humorous story. The other one is, it seems to me that, and I always get a little bit frustrated when we talk in terms like this, and I know it's a question of semantics, but you know what? It's not the state's money. It's people's money. It's their money. And until we take it from them in some purpose, it's not their money. And the effect of this is essentially anybody who is wearing their seatbelts just had their fine raised by $10, regardless of their moving violation. And because it's a bad idea and because it's unconstitutional, I urge you to defeat the amendment.
Senator Burns.
President, I agree also. I think it's constitutional, but I also think it's a bad idea. I'm kind of, the logic of the good senator from Albany County is kind of lost on me. If it's not working, if the incentive's not there, then why are we losing $1 million a year on the thing? As a matter of fact, if the state's losing $2 million a year, that means it's working twice as much. The more money we're theoretically losing under this logic, the more people are wearing their seatbelts.
Senator Johnson.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. This brings back a memory where I can talk about municipal court here. And when the judge took off the $10, I said, "Oh, yeah, we passed that, didn't we?" It's a reward for me wearing my seatbelt. And I remember it. And I remember it every time I put the seatbelt on. So don't know about constitutionality, bad amendment.
Senator Massey, for your second time.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. And if nothing else, this discussion has made it clear that we have switched the reason for this, keeping in the law, from an incentive to a reward. Because very clearly there has not been any indication, and the Highway Patrol has backed that up, that folks are wearing their seatbelt because they believe that this will give them a reduced ticket. They have no idea that this law is there. This is just simply a discount for wearing your seatbelt. And so you're just simply rewarding people for doing something that they decided to do on their own in the first place.
Question is, shall second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 64 pass? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The amendment have failed. Senate File 64 haven't been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Senate File 69, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 69, sponsored by the Natural Resources Committee. Natural Resources Large Project Funding.
Senate File 69, haven't been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Senate File 71, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 71, sponsored by Senator Hastert, disposal of remains military personnel.
Senate File 71, haven't been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Senate File 72, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 72, sponsored by the Appropriations Committee, Wyoming Retirement Plan Contributions 2.
There is an amendment. Will the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
Senate File 72, second reading amendment number 1, page 3, line 12.
Senator Sessions.
Mr. President, I move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 72 and ask for your approval. It's a policy decision, people. And I know that this amendment looks rather odd, but I've been back to our staff 3 times to make sure that it does what it's supposed to do. And what it does is it reduces by 1/2 the first year that our people that pay into the retirement funds will have to take the amount of money they will have to take out of their own pocket. The second year, it will be the exact amount that's in the bill. So in essence, what it does, it gives a year to adjust, and then another, and then the second part kicks in. I will submit to you that there are many people, me being one of them, that have always lived on a defined income. And you may not think that this is a big deal. But let me tell you, if you're a single parent, whether you're a woman or a man raising a child, it is a big deal. And if you have anyone, it is a big deal in today's world because we're paying increased costs in many areas. All this does is give a chance to adjust your income and what goes out of your income. I was on management audit when we did the report. I had been in capital finance when we looked at several things. I understand the need for doing this, but I don't think that the sky is going to fall in on us if we do it in a graduated manner. So, and as a protection for the people who do the work for us. I don't understand this shoving this right now. I think it can be done in a much less erroneous way. So I would ask for your support for this amendment. Thank you.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. On and against the amendment, the impact of this is simply to deprive the account of about $13 million worth of investment income. If you were then to take that $13 million, project it over 15 or 20 years, then you've lost the investment off that revenue. So you're, you know, another $4 million over several years, so the impact becomes $17 million. You know, people don't think that these small amounts have an impact, but it's like for those of you that have got involved in a in your IRA accounts, if you start your IRA account when you're 20 and you put in $2,000, even though it's hard, and you do that when you're young, you could actually stop when you're young, and you could never make up those payments with your old because you lose the value of the investment value of it. So a person that, you know, you've seen those models, a person that starts making investing at 20 and puts in an IRA for 10 years can stop, and you can start making them, the investments when you're 50, and every year till you die, and you'll never catch up with the person that put it in early because it's the value of the investment that goes in. So you think, well, it's only $13 million, and we ought to, this year we just can't simply afford to invest in our retirement. And then 20 years later, you look back and say, well, now I'm $20 million short. Where did it go? Well, it went from a decision for 1 year that you just weren't prepared to bite the bullet and make that extra investment. We know what the experts have told us requires. It's 1.4% of the everybody's income, and that's just on their side. And we're going to kick in the other 1.4%. Why not go to the state and say, you know, well, if the employees should only have to contribute half, then let's only contribute half ourselves. And then you'd be $25 million down instead of $13 million. So these amounts may seem insignificant. They become significant because of the value of investment over time. It's never going to be easy. It's never easy to invest in your retirement, but it's an obligation that we all have. And it's an obligation that we have to the future people that want to, and the folks that are already depending on this account to be solvent forever. And you make these decisions easy, and you chip away and chip away, and pretty soon you have a big responsibility you can't, it's hard to make up. So I'd urge you to, let's make the decision that we're not going to be one of those states that doesn't stand up to their responsibilities as you go along. This is a current fiscal responsibility that somebody has to attend to. Let's attend to it now.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, yeas and nays, please. Mr. President, I think this is a fundamental issue. You know, we've gotten into a hole, been partly our own fault with some of the things we've done in the retirement account. It's been partly the fault of what happened in the financial markets. But we've got to deal with it. And the more we procrastinate on dealing with it, the worse it's going to be. So let's be responsible, and let's defeat this amendment.
Senator Johnson.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. Baseball's the natural pastime of this country, historically, and put yourself in the place of our state employees. Probably both of them are working, and strike one, no pay raise. Strike two, significant increase in their medical insurance payments. Strike three, this bill adding, taking away money to add to the retirement system right now. And they're not coming in asking us to defeat the bill. They can understand reality. They can understand responsibility. They're just saying, with no pay raise, with this health insurance increase, let us move into it a little slower, do half now and do half in another year. I think that's very responsible, and I think that's very much the right thing to do.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. President, I mean, you can make those decisions, and they're tough decisions. Just so you know, I've got a fertile mind. And anyway, I actually calculated the cost of waiting on this, and I calculated the cost that we had yesterday, and it's really easy to do today because it's just half as much. So ultimately, if you wait 1 year, you've got to put in another $1 million. If we come back here a year and we have this problem, we do this amendment, you've got to put in another $1 million next year to catch up. Does that come out of the employees at that point in time, or does the state kick that in? If you wait 5 years, that number's now $1.4 million. If you wait 15 years, that number's $3 million. If you wait 20 years, that number's $4 million. That number, if you don't do it now, that number's got to come from somewhere. Either the employees are going to cough it up later, or the state's going to cough it up later. You know, there's a lot of people in my district and people I know, while absorbing increases in medical care, and in some cases haven't been able to even contribute to IRAs and 401ks and other types of retirement plans because the money was just too tight the last few years. So, you know, it is a tough time, and it's a tough decision, but when we delay these back next year, it may be even tighter. And come out of pocket even more when there's even less money. And you know, I think that it's just sometimes it's just best to take your medicine and get it cured and move on.
And I would urge you to defeat this amendment yesterday, but it appears to be by going to September 1st, we're given a two-month leeway already. Most bills come into effect the 1st of July. We have a report. We know what it is. This legislation is a lot responsible for some of the problem we're in, is my belief, of over the years. Couldn't have because there was money. I'll go back to the baseball job. In the private sector, many don't. In fact, some of my sons and sons-in-laws don't because of the decrease of the economy. Strike two, they probably do have got good medical coverage that the state pays for. And strikes that we're trying to keep solvent. You've seen the projections out when we know there is an unfunded liability out there. It's just clearly wrong. And in the past amendment, let's get it solved for the... And I would submit to you, as I did, many of them are much better off than the people in the private sector are who don't have a job, a paycheck, or any medical insurance.
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm going to rise in support of this amendment with a lot of due respect to those of my senators behind me. I fully understand what to do with that fund. Before I came down to this session, I visited one of our state offices up in the central part of the state, Department of Family Service, whom work counter jobs. Really are not paid all that well in the grand scheme of things. And those workers have seen their caseloads in some cases double. The morale is low. The good senator from Laramie County, Nathan O'Cost of Living, our other good senator from Laramie County pointed out that many of these workers are single parents. I'm Albany County. It is an impact, but it's also a very dramatic impact to those thousands of compromise. I think we can take this in graduated steps, and I think it's a good amendment. I'm going to support it.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. It is a State Employees Compensation Commission rebalancing program, and 2,200 of the state employees will be getting rebalanced to market. And so they will be getting a pay increase. So that's 2,200 out of about 8,500. So not everybody will not be getting a pay increase this year.
Let's see. Anyone want to speak again before the sponsor of the amendment have her second term? Senator Session.
I get money that goes through here for all kinds of projects. And if the concern is $13 million after the amount of money we spent, $13 million to be reinvested, then take it out of the $50 million that's sitting there that has been put aside. Take it out, put it in there, and do it in respect, I guess, for the people who do the work for us in this state. And I have a hard time, and I know quite a lot about investing. I have a hard time believing that we're going to end up in all of the dire circumstances that have been projected. Even now, even a year ago, there was still a big argument about how far down this retirement system was. We've had some real problems, and we have various differences. So anyway, I would urge you, it is a policy decision, but I would urge you, no one is asking you to defeat this, to walk away completely from doing our responsibility. We're asking you to make it a little bit erroneous and or onerous, whatever it is, I can't remember. It's bad. So that you start thinking ahead of yourself, so that people can adjust just how they pay their bills. Thank you.
Question is, shall Second Amendment number one to Senate File 2 pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson? Bebout, Burns, Case, Coe, Cooper, Dockstader, Elliott, Esquibel, Geis, Hastert, Honeycutt, Jennings, Johnson, Landon, Larson, Martin, Massey, Meyer, Meyer-S, Nicholas, Perkins, Peterson, Ross, Schiffer, Scott, Sessions, Townsend, Von Platern, President Hines,
no.
Closing vote, closing vote closed. 13 ayes, 17 noes.
The amendment has failed. Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. President. May I have privilege of the floor for just a moment?
Would you wait just a second?
Sure.
Senate File 72, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. President. Sorry to interrupt on Senate File 72, but I'm excited to introduce some of the top high school students in the state this morning. They come from my home district. They're here with their instructor, Mr. Jim Horn. Please welcome the students from Kelly Walsh High School and make them feel welcome from the Senate.
Welcome to the Senate. We're glad to have you here today. Senator Jennings.
President, if I may continue on that permission on the floor, that teacher up there is also the coach that took the Trojans to the victory in the Oil Bowl. Go Trojans.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. President. And while we're taking a break here, I wanted to introduce some other folks that are up in the balcony. And the students and staff from the Wyoming Trio and Gear Up program are here with us today from the University of Wyoming. It's particularly important to recognize them because these programs provide assistance and support to first-generation college students, particularly those from families with limited income, traditionally underrepresented in higher education, and students with disabilities. So we are changing the way that we're doing things with these families. And this is the first time they're giving higher education a chance, and they're going to be successful. So if those folks would stand up, and can we welcome them to the Senate?
Welcome to the Senate, and congratulations on getting your education and improving your lives. Senate File 76, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 76, sponsored by Senator Dockstader, State Loan and Investment Grants Criteria.
Senate File 76, haven't been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Bills on third reading and final passage. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do we have a consent list?
Yes, Mr. President, we do. Third reading consent list as follows. Senate File 9, Juvenile Detention Facilities Standards. Senate File 18, Limited Liability Companies Revisions. Senate File 22, State Active Duty Medical Expense Reimbursement. Senate File 31, Federal Natural Resource Policy Account. Senate File 37, Omnibus Water Bill Construction. Senate File 42, School Finance, Student Enrichment Instruction. Senate File 51, Official State Code. And, Mr. President, finally, Senate File 63, Irrigation District Assessments.
The consent list today is Senate File 9, Juvenile Detention Facilities Standards. Senate File 18, Limited Liability Company Revision. Senate File 22, State Active Duty Medical Expense Reimbursement. Senate File 31, Federal Natural Resource Policy Account. Senate File 37, Omnibus Water Bill Construction. Senate File 42, School Finance, Student Enrichment Instruction. Senate File 51, Official State Code. And Senate File 63, Irrigation District Assessment. Would anyone like any of these bills removed from the consent list? Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? Senate File 9, Senate File 18, Senate File 22, Senate File 31, Senate File 37, Senate File 42, Senate File 51, and Senate File 63. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Coe. Cooper.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Elliott.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Honeycutt.
Aye.
Jennings. Johnson,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Larson,
aye.
Martin,
aye.
Massey,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Meyer-S,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Ross,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Sessions,
aye.
Townsend,
aye.
Bonflatern,
aye.
President Hines,
aye.
30 ayes. Senate File 9, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 9, 30 ayes. Senate File 18, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 18, 30 ayes. Senate File 22, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 22, 30 ayes. Senate File 31, are there any changes? Schiffer, aye to no. Massey, aye to no. Case, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 31, 27 ayes, 3 noes. Senate File 37, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing vote closed. Senate File 37, 30 ayes. Senate File 42, are there any changes?
Scott,
aye to no.
Larson,
aye to no.
Perkins,
aye to no.
Case,
aye to no. Landon, aye to no. Dockstader,
aye to no.
Schiffer,
aye to no.
Bebout, aye to no.
Johnson,
aye to no.
Hines, aye to no.
President Hines, aye to no. Senator Larson, what was your vote?
Aye to no.
Okay. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. Senate File 42, 20 ayes, 10 noes. Senate File 51, are there any changes? Burns, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. Senate File 51, 29 ayes, 1 no. Senate File 63, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing vote closed. Senate File 63, 30 ayes.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 9, Senate File 18, Senate File 22, Senate File 31, Senate File 37, Senate File 42, Senate File 51, and Senate File 63 have passed the Senate. Senate File 26, third reading of the Senate File. Should be now.
Am I on? Okay. Senate File 26, sponsored by Senator Case. Eligibility Concealed Weapons Permit, an act relating to crimes and offenses. Be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
There is amendment. Will the reading clerk please read the amendment in?
Senate File 26, third reading amendment number 1, page 2, lines 4 through 12.
Senator Case.
Mr. President, thank you very much. Mr. President, I would move third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 26. I remind the members of the Senate that this is the amendment I talked about yesterday, that it might be coming your way, and that there were discussions happening between some of the major parties involved in this piece of legislation revolving around concealed weapons permits in Wyoming and how we can recognize permits from other states. I'm happy to report that I think there's agreement among the parties on this amendment. This is a pared-down amendment from the one that was offered by that very large organization that represents gun owners across America and so ably represents them. It's pared down a little bit from that, Mr. Chairman, as it was shown to the Judiciary Committee. If you recall, that amendment also took out, it went into the criteria for Wyoming residents to get permits and eliminated, like, the sheriff having involvement in that, et cetera. What this amendment does, and I think everybody on all sides agree, and I can represent that the Attorney General of Wyoming does not oppose this amendment, what this does is say that when it comes to reciprocity, The AG is not going to determine whether another state is reciprocal with Wyoming. The fact that the other state has a process is good enough to recognize those permit holders from other states to carry in Wyoming. Be careful what it doesn't do. It doesn't change the criteria for a Wyoming citizen to have a permit. It doesn't do it. It doesn't affect that whatsoever. It's not really blending the two bills. We've talked about there being another bill in the House of Representatives that seems to be moving forward that actually allows citizens of Wyoming to carry a permit or carry a concealed weapon without a permit. How you feel about that depends. We can deal with that on another bill. That's not this bill. This is only how we grant reciprocity with other states. And this basically says, you know, another state granting a privilege to carry a concealed weapon is something we will recognize, just like we will recognize another state giving a driver's license to drive a car. It doesn't change it for Wyoming folks. So that is the bulk of the amendment, and that's the entirety of the amendment. And I can truthfully represent the Attorney General of Wyoming does not oppose this amendment. It wasn't his idea, you know, but he does not oppose it. And it is represented, it is supported by gun owners and that very, very large, kind, generous organization that supports gun ownership throughout America.
Benedict K. Larson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just have one question. The Attorney General does not oppose the amendment. Does the Attorney General believe that this will grant us reciprocity throughout the other states?
Other people that wishes to speak before the Senator's session.
Mr. Chairman, just a question, or Mr. President, excuse me, just a question. Then if we take the Attorney General out of the process, then who decides? Who decides that another state permits are valid or that we're going to recognize them? I understand now we only recognize what it's going to state with reciprocity. So who decides if we take this out?
Further discussion before the sponsor of the amendment takes his second term. Time. Senator Case.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. We will have reciprocity with this amendment. The Attorney General says that this will not jeopardize the reciprocity or his process of determining reciprocity because he takes them out of it. Makes it easy for him, actually. With respect to the good senator from Cheyenne, in essence, I think no one will, as long as you have a permit, a valid permit from another state, we will recognize it. Now, if the permit's not valid, maybe it's out of date or I don't know what other criteria, that would be up to the law enforcement personnel involved with that situation. But there will be no blessing by our Attorney General's office of the other state's process because really we're all trying to conform and be the substitute for the federal background check. That's one purpose throughout America, that we have these concealed permit at the state level. So I think it's fair to say that we're all kind of on the same page trying to achieve the same thing, and that it's much, if you start to think about it like issuance of a driver's license, we don't question Vermont's issuing of a driver's license. We don't say, well, that they're too old or too young or whatever. We just honor the Vermont driver's license. Now, if that license is out of date, it's not valid, it's expired, it's been revoked, we'll deal with that. Thank you, Mr. President.
The question is, shall third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 26 pass? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment have passed. We're back on the bill. Senate File 26. Having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Elliott.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Honeycutt.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Larson.
Aye.
Martin.
Aye.
Massey.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Meyer-S.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Sessions.
Aye.
Townsend.
Aye.
Von Flatern.
Aye.
President Hines.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 30 ayes.
Senate File 30. Senate File 26, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 26 have passed the Senate. That is Senate File 26. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. President. May I have privilege of the floor?
You may.
Fellow senators, every year I thoroughly enjoy introducing a group from Pine Bluffs, our community in Laramie County, 45 miles east of us on the Nebraska border. They have a youth group there called the Pine Bluffs Mayor's Youth Council, and this group participates. They have their tables at the city council meetings, and they participate in the business of the city council, whether the city council likes that or not. And they do a really good job. And if they will stand up over in the south, the youth council is accompanied by Donna Crandall, Ann Lansden, and Cindy Schroyer. But I would like to introduce Kayla Kay, the vice mayor, James Schutz, the treasurer, okay, Rachel Purdy, the secretary, and Jesse Kennedy, the historian. Unfortunately, the mayor is not able to be here, but will you please welcome the very active Pine Bluffs Mayor Youth Council.
Welcome to the Senate. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we are of that order of business. Considerations of bills on general file.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself into the Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried. Senator Hatcher.
Keep it warm. Are you ready?
The Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 75. The reading clerk will read the Senate file.
Senate File 75, sponsored by Senator Nicholas, School District Health Insurance 2, and Act Relating to School Districts. It was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Massey, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, and Townsend. Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Nicholas.
The whole rise of the report and do so with a favorable recommendation for Senate File 75. Ladies and gentlemen, the Appropriations Committee has been assigned to the task of trying to sort out school district insurance over the last two or three years. And we never came up with a good solution. The problem is very complex. Under the model funding, the model funds health insurance for various districts based upon prototypical numbers. we fund it based upon the contributions that we make to state health and state employees. But we know that there are districts that whose employees don't actively participate in the plans as much as others, because their spouses may be employed by mines or others. So there appears to be districts that make money on the present model funding. And we know that there are small districts who have difficulty sometimes getting insurance, or when they can get it, it's so much more expensive than the model provides that they lose money and ultimately use their foundation guarantee dollars to pay for the insurance. Each time we've provided a solution to that, to try to either say we'll create a state plan, or we'll only reimburse you for the actual dollars you spend on insurance, it gets complicated. One thing that's very interesting is that most of the school districts are insured in a variety of private plans, and those plans are also participated with cities, towns, counties, and other entities. And so those other plans kind of depend on the state having school districts that share in the... If I didn't move the bill, I moved the bill. I moved it, didn't I? I moved it. I got a... never mind. A nice little message told me to... I said I moved... Yeah, I moved it. I remember saying it. Thanks. But anyway, maybe that's another statement to get to the point and get on. So, folks, what we decided to do after the committee is to go ahead and just make it an opportunity for school districts to join the state plan. And in order to make sure that it's that it does not impact adversely the state plan, if a school district joins the state plan, it has to join for at least 5 years. And the point there is that you can't join when you have a high risk and just bail out the next year. You have to join, stay in for 5 years. And the flip side of it is that means that these private insurers can compete every 5 years to try to attract the districts back out into the private sector. So as we are assured by our state insurance folks that this would be a manageable risk for them. They could handle it. Now, when a district joins, it has to join on the same terms that the state provides its insurance. So you have to provide the same coverage. For some districts, this will mean broader coverage, because some districts don't provide coverage for all part-time employees, or they may say that you have to work a minimum of 30 hours a week to be eligible. Under the state plan, if you work 20 hours a week, you're eligible. So if you have, it may require increased eligibility, and districts may not find it a financially suitable way to go. In most instances, the state plan insures a broader group of people than most districts. And there are a lot of part-time people in school districts that aren't insured. The state has made a determination to provide broader coverage. For retirees, if retirees join the plan, are eligible, stay continuously insured, they can move with the plan. And so ultimately, that's the same thing with the state of Wyoming. The state of Wyoming, if you retire and you elect to stay under the state insurance plan, you could stay insured. But if you go out and go to another employee and stop employer, or if you find a less expensive plan and you stop participating with the plan, you cannot come back in. And the purpose of that is obviously to prevent adverse selection. So as long as you have similar type plans and retiree benefits, then you can move in. So not every district will find it appropriate. Some districts may not like it at all. But it provides one more opportunity for districts that can't get insurance, some of those smaller districts, to get in if they cannot provide alternative insurance. There's no appropriation to the bill. It's up to the district to be able to come in, elect in, and pay the entire cost. I would urge your support of Senate File 75, and if I didn't move it, I move the bill.
Any further discussion? Senator Cooper.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just had a verification. Yeah, that too. Verification question for the sponsor here. I was thinking. I heard you say that. Is it in fact that they can get the same coverage or better coverage from this from their current policy? Is that part of this? I just wasn't quite sure how you put that.
Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not certain I understand the question, but let me. If a district joins the state plan, it has to join the plan and provide the same coverage that we provide to our state employees, because you have to come in the state plan. Now, if the state plan says that requires a payment for a single employee of $700, then a premium of $7 has to be paid. Now, how the district allocates that is their own business. In our case, generally, we're doing the 85-15 contribution level. A district could choose any other method of allocation, but there has to be the same premium paid into the account. District could choose to pay all of it, the entire premium, if it chose to. Now, with respect to the benefits are defined by our plan, and you get the same benefits that our plan provides. Now, so generally, if that's what your question. Now, with respect to the private plans, they may have, they may be better, they may be worse, whatever worse is. I mean, they may provide broader or narrower coverage. I don't know the answer to that. I don't think anybody would.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Two questions. One, I think I already know the answer, but I want to be sure on pre-existing conditions. It would have no impact on that. Second question, Mr. Chairman, as you stated, the bill had no appropriation, and I think I understand that as well, but maybe you should explain why we have the fiscal note that said there is an appropriation of $1.1 million. It also contains an authorization of 15 full-time employees.
The question is, with respect to the pre-existing conditions, as a group moves from one policy to the other, the policy takes the entire group as they exist, and that's why we have a five-year minimum, so that if you, on the day that you take that group, if you have somebody that has a high expense, the assumption is it'll balance over 5 years. With respect to the appropriation, I should have clarified there's no general fund or budget reserve appropriation. There is, however, an appropriation that would be a special revenue, which would be if the district comes in, you need to give them the authority to spend the money they've collected in part for benefits. So this is if you look at the fiscal note, you'll see that it's an appropriation for special revenue. So this is the spending authority to spend the premiums that they've collected to pay out for benefits. And, you know, as we do that for the estate plan, if you look at ANI's budget, there's actually a spending authority for a huge number every year to pay for benefits. So that's something that takes place. With respect to the staff, as my understanding, they're going to be able to attend to this with their existing staff. But, obviously, if all the districts were to join, then there would be a staff complement required, but those staff are paid for by internal funds collected from premiums.
Senator Scott.
Chairman, I've got a question on this bill. My question is, did you get any indication from the school districts that they are in need of this option? Were there any districts that came to you and said, if you will let us in, we'll come?
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With respect to that question, as it stands today, it looks as though all of the districts have acquired insurance, and they've acquired it through these one of two trusts that exist. Health insurance trust in Wyoming that have gone out and filled the need. Over the course of our hearings, the answer is yes. There was a period of about 2 years ago where one district could not acquire insurance, and ultimately one of the insurance trusts went in and took care of that. If you go back 5 years, we have districts that could not and went uninsured for a period of a year or two, some of the smaller districts. So, in part, over the time that we've been looking at the problem, we've had districts that could not get insurance.
Then we've had districts that had difficulty getting insurance. We have districts who are more or less self-insured. So the Albany County District, for example, 2 years ago was called upon to contribute almost $1.5 million above and beyond their premiums to their self-insured entity. And as a consequence of that, they didn't give raises that year because they used all of their foundation available money that they came. We gave them an ECA that year. The entire ECA went to health insurance, not premiums, but to the self-insured's responsibility. That district now has joined the trust. They're committed to a minimum of 2 years for the same reason we're creating 5 years. So many of the districts are out there have contract requirements requiring them to stay with their trust for a period of time. We believe right now everybody's contracted. When they come up with those contracts, it will be really a function of what we think is two things. One is what is the investment market doing? Because insurance companies do make money off their investments. And what do they do with their premiums? And they'll evaluate at that time. But for many districts, if obviously they can't acquire it, they can come into the plan. But remember, if you're a district that does not provide insurance for part-time employees over 20 hours, you're going to have to increase the number of people you provide insurance for, and you may not be afforded for that reason.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, and I think my district is probably one that is self-insured, and I suspect some kind of reinsurance. I don't know whether it's through one of your trusts or not. Mr. Chairman, and I know, Mr. Chairman, my district has had considerable success by the management and the union up there getting together and making a big deal about holding the cost down and the wellness benefits. And, in fact, they have had one of the lower rates of increase of anybody anywhere in the state. They've done a very good job in managing their plan. Mr. Chairman, I have some reservations about this bill. And I'm not at all sure. The reservations are twofold. One, I think we are putting the state in competition with private insurers for selling this service. Second, I think when the districts look into it, unless they are in a particular situation where they've got a very high-cost population, it may well not be in their financial interest to come in the state. Last year, Committee 10 got some figures on the cost of individuals insured, and let me just read them, Mr. Chairman. We were interested in the Medicaid program, but the figures we got showed the state plan for adults in our largest private insurer, and this is not a sample. This is 100% of health care claims. Their cost per adult was $3,068. For state employee adults, the cost was $4,463. And that, in both cases, the costs include the employee's cost sharing. So it's the insurance company plus what the employee paid in the copayments. The Medicaid cost was even a little worse than our state employee's plan. It was $4,542. For children, and children are relevant here because you get family coverage, the cost for the private insurer was $1,013. The cost for the state employees plan was $1,384. So it was significantly more, but not overwhelmingly more. The cost for Medicaid in that case was $2,788, and this is after controlling for severity by removing the developmentally disabled population. I suppose it won't do any harm because it's voluntary. But I really wonder about us going down this route
when our state employees plan is so high cost. And I wonder, I think there is some possibility for adverse selection if you get a small school district with a very high cost population. I suppose we have some obligations to deal with that. But I really wonder about this bill because it does put us in competition with private insurance sellers.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It puts us in competition, but it's for public employees. So it's a public employees insurance plan. It isn't a public employees plan for private individuals.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I think I would be remiss if I didn't rise and speak in favor of this in regard to the number of small schools that I have in my Senate district, as well as other small school districts across the state. And I can fully appreciate the comments made by the chairman of the Health Labor Committee, because I know that he has an extreme knowledge in regard to how health programs, wellness programs, and insurance programs work. And I can also fully appreciate the fact that a larger school district would have a smaller increase in cost annually, because we know from our experience with the economy of scales that those larger districts can absorb those extreme costs of perhaps those costly cancer cases or others. And those cases, if they were to occur, maybe even one or two in a small district, drive up those costs proportionately more than they would in a large district. But I think what we're finding in the smaller districts in regard to the ability to provide insurance in smaller districts, you know, given this ability to receive your pay in another district, in other words, what we've done in regard to pay and benefits, if you move from, a smaller district to a larger district, you can take your experience with you. And so that makes the ability for a larger district to recruit pretty competitively for teachers. So in talking to our smaller districts, and one of my smaller districts is within 18 miles of a much larger district, and so I'm very familiar with this competitive thing that goes on. One of the ways that they attempt to compete with a larger district is through benefit, quality of life, health insurance, and other things. So I would just simply say, when we find ourselves in these larger districts and given this ability to pay, they have to compete in different ways. And one of the would be competing with a larger district, or at least they find out that if those expenses go up at the lower levels, then they are forced to pay in order to compete perhaps a lower coverage or a lesser coverage or a larger copay. And so they don't have, I think, the latitude in the ability to adjust their rates and compete in those smaller schools. I appreciated the good gentleman from Natrona County in his final last statements in regard to those small school districts and recognizing that. Without rambling and without exposing myself in regard to my lack of knowledge in regard to the whole insurance field, I just say that this is a plan, I think, that really takes into account those numbers of small school districts that we have in the state and gives them, I think, a bit more of a cost-friendly haven for them to provide for their employees. Thank you.
Senator Nicholas. No, Senator Schiffer. I'm sorry.
No. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I concur with the remarks from the majority floor leader. For small districts, this may be a very viable option. Mr. Chairman, I do have a question on, and I'm looking on page 6, starting in lines 11, the borrowing capacity from the general fund and budget reserve. Could we have a little more explanation about the insurance loan program?
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you. With respect to the $60 million, and that is my understanding, I'll make sure that I'm correct, but I believe those borrowing capacities exist with all the plans, and they're simply to be sure that you can cover benefits at a time when your premiums aren't coming in. So your premiums come over a full year, And if you had big claims at the beginning of the year, you would have an expense before your revenues come in, but it has to be repaid. So all it is that it's anticipating that your revenues from your premiums may not meet your expenditures, and there's a borrowing capacity, but it's only temporary, and it's simply just to make sure that that part-time expense exists. And I'll double-check that, but I'm quite certain it's just simply a temporary borrowing function for that aspect. With respect to these plans, and I guess as we all have to have a philosophy as we go through, and I think the Senator from Casper presents some very interesting issues that need to be addressed and sorted out. If you're a smaller district and you're getting insured in one of these trusts, it doesn't mean that you're getting into a group insurance plan where everybody has the same premium. It might be that Niobrara's county school district, that their premium's $1,000 because they have a small group. And it may be that same administrator is administrating a group in Albany County that's only $800. So that the size of your group defines your premium. So don't think that simply because all these groups are getting under the trust that their premiums are the same and they're part of a group. And that's a problem because we fund through the foundation guarantee everybody at the same rate based upon the state premium. And fundamentally, there's a disconnect because not every district has the capacity to acquire insurance at the same rate as their competitors. So if you're from Cheyenne and Casper, it's great. Because if you can go out and get your insurance for less than the smaller districts, then you get to take the excess dollars and pump it into athletics or whatever you want. But if you're one of the smaller districts, you've got to come up with that extra premium because your premiums are higher than the average because you're small. And then you've got to worry about whether you even get insurance the next year. Or the next year, what are you going to do? And we know in the last 10 years that Niobrara County went for a period of time without insurance. They couldn't afford it. It wasn't even available for them. Having said that, competition is important, and we have a need within the state to have our insurers healthy. If you're a company in Fremont County or Teton County and you're out buying insurance, one of the reasons why your insurance companies are in business is because they're providing other services to cities, towns, counties, and the school districts. You jerk all that business away from them, and if you're a small business, you might find it gets very difficult to even find insurance because there's not enough business out there to keep your insurance brokers and these companies in business. And I think we all ought to be concerned about it to the extent that we participate, and, you know, we keep monies in our local banks. They need those monies. You pull out all the state investments in all your local banks, they're going to have less money out there to lend. We have an interest in making sure that we have a healthy insurance industry, and I think that's our colleague from Casper saying, look, you need to have these people in the private industry. Having said that, I think where I came back down to the final decision is that no matter how you look at it, these are state employees. They need to be able to insure, and as a last resort, they ought to be able to jump into this plan. So what's going to happen is that the private insurers are going to have to stay competitive with what's offered by the state. And you're right. If the state has a more expensive plan, all the private folks have to do is target underneath that. Plus, there are some hurdles to get into the state plan, and one is that if you're only insuring people with a minimum of 30 hours a week, and you want to jump to the state plan, you're going to have to offer more insurance to a broader number of people because the requirement is 20 hours a week. But at least it's the public option. At least the public option's available. And it's there. It's available for them as a last resort. Now, with respect to the amount that we pay, without knowing information, it's hard to address that issue, but I would assume, if you ask me today, that the state plan is more expensive for a variety of number of reasons. Folks, we have a great plan for our employees. There's broad coverage. There's very low copay. It has broad prescription care coverage. It's a great plan. And if you go to state plans, many of the private plans are going to have higher co-pays. They're going to have higher, more expensive contribution to prescription care or none at all. And then remember, too, that our plan, the general plan, subsidizes the cost of retirees. So when we pay for each of our employees, there are a bunch of retirees out there that are also participating in the plan, and their premiums are being subsidized by the big plan. And most of us that have private insurance, we don't offer insurance to our retirees. Once they leave the employment, they're required to go someplace else to get their insurance. And so to the extent that there's a group of retirees, most private plans don't have to address that. So there's a variety of reasons why the public insurance is more expensive than what the private might find.
Senator Scott.
I did want to speak to one thing that was said, and that was that the reason why some of the plans were more expensive was that they were smaller. Mr. Chairman, that is a very common myth, and it statistically is invalid. The expected cost is what the expected cost is, and it is independent of the size of the plan. The trouble you get into with a very small group is that you may have an outlier that is high cost in a big group, an outlier is spread over all a much larger pool and doesn't affect you. With a small group, you know, the insurance company puts you into a great big pool that it has, and the risks average out. If you're self-insured, you then have with a small group, you have to worry about reinsurance, and that is expensive. But basically, the expected cost of a group is going to be determined not by the size of it, but by other factors that give you an experience with it as to what that particular group of people, how costly they are. And the biggest factor is likely to be age, because the older you get, the more likely you are to get something expensive wrong with you. And it makes a difference. The age of the group can make as much as 6 or 7 times difference in terms of the premium. So that's probably the source of major differences that you're seeing in premiums from one school district to another. So it does come down to a matter of philosophy. I don't think I have any further debate, Mr. Chairman. I call for the question.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I really appreciate the concerns about the small school districts, and I think those are very valid. I'm listening to the concerns about the private sector, and as I look at the number of potential employees that might be transferring from the private to the state to be 16,000, and I don't know, that's roughly, 5 to 7% of our workforce in the state. There are only a very, very small number of insurance companies that provide coverage for small groups. And people in my district have tried to go out and get quotes, and if they're even available, these quotes are even available, there's only one or two of these groups that give quotes on insurance, and the costs are substantial. I just wondered when the committee heard testimony if they had any idea from these small groups if this would impact them, because if it starts to impact them, it's going to be like a snowball, because if more of those pull out, then obviously more of the district would go into the state plan, but then the private sector really loses an opportunity to do that. And a lot of these smaller companies are looking at the catastrophic insurance the state offers, which is, you know, it's very expensive, but that's their only choice. So, Mr. Chairman, I guess I just want to be sure that we're not going to hurt this, turn it into a situation that this 16,000 becomes more, and then we come back to this body a couple of years from now, and a small employer, and it could be anywhere from 2 to 3 to 15, 20, 50 people, really don't have a chance to buy any insurance.
Senator Hines.
Mr. Chairman, my question was I see where this bill authorized up to 15 full-time employees. But as I look through the bill, they talk about if there's only 5 districts or something apply. And I guess my question would be, Was there any discussion or concern about limiting the number if there's only a few apply? You know, if 16,000, I can see where they probably need that many employees. But if we just have a few apply, can they still go ahead and get the 15 employees?
Senator Nicholas.
Chairman, and you can see the authorization is up to, so ultimately they determine the number of employees that they can employ. They wouldn't do it. Remember, they're working off premium dollars, so that they're their premiums, and they need to keep their premiums down. And in some of these agencies that, whether it's retirement that hires their own employees and are paid from retirement dollars, or the insurance that are paid from insurance dollars, they have a financial interest in keeping their dollars down. So we were not struggling with that. We really don't think that a lot of districts are going to choose to jump into this. With respect to the private industry, the folks that are providing this insurance, they came to us and they were heavy objectors to any effort by us, the state, to get into the essentially a pooled insurance for all the districts, to have one statewide plan for all teachers. And the reason was because they're deriving a lot of their profits. When we presented this bill, they said that we could live with it because we've recognized that the state now is a competitor offering insurance to us. We think we can compete on these terms. And one of the things that allowed to reduce their objection was putting in the five-year period where they could go and compete to have every 5 years to get the district back into their insurance pool. And they would have liked it to be more like 3 or 2 years. Our big plan people administering it, or the insurance folks, said we're more comfortable with 5 years because we may end up picking these districts up when an outlier is right there, because we'll have to look at their experiences. And maybe we're splitting hairs, but when you go to buy, acquire insurance for your group, if you're a small district, if you've got a history where somebody was very ill in a small group, your premiums are going to be high. And if you're in self-insurance, in Albany County situation, they had premiums that were equal to or higher than the state, and when they had a very bad experience with one or two employees or a small enough group, that they've got to cough out a check of $1.3 million that year. And nobody was there to reimburse them because they did not get to spread their risk across the entire state. When we provide funding to school districts, we provide funding to them on the assumption that every school can acquire insurance at the same rate. And we fund them on that basis. And it's simply not the case. Some districts simply cannot either acquire it, or when they do acquire it, they have to take care of those outliers, and those get built into their premiums. And so as a practical matter, the private industry said they could live with this the way we've got it structured. We have an obligation to make sure that all districts have the opportunity, the small districts, to get insured on the same terms that Casper, that Cheyenne, that Gillette can. And it's really not a very fair system if we're paying the same premiums to everybody on the assumption that everybody can go out and acquire insurance when they can't. They simply can't.
Question. Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 75, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 75 is passed to Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 2. Reading clerk will read the bill.
Well, I think there's some just...
Senate File 2, sponsored by the Management Council, Appropriations for the Legislature. An act relating to appropriations for the legislature. It was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriation, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Massey, C. Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, Townsend, Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move first reading on Senate File 2. Senate File 2 contains an appropriation for the general operation of legislative branch of government. This is what we commonly refer to as a feed bill. Mr. Chairman, this bill includes appropriations for such things as salaries for legislators, LSO staff, the session staff, both for the general and the budget session. There is also an appropriation for general administrative support, and that includes our supplies and printing and photocopying and technology software, all those things that allow us to operate in the manner and the means that we do. This bill carries forward a number of small appropriations for small projects that remained uncompleted and provides a small budget for legislative furnishings recommended by the Select Committee on Facilities. And if you do look at the back, of course, at the appropriation, you'll see that there's a separate section for those that's effective immediately for those items of furniture and art, and that's what the previous comment referred to. And finally, this bill also includes an appropriation for the legislative redistricting. We know that that's coming up, and that takes a considerable amount of committee work, travel around the state with public meetings. That, I would think, would be the major difference between this budget than the one we presented during the final biennium. But this bill has been reviewed in detail and approved by the Management Council. And so with that explanation, I would again move introduction on this Senate File 2.
Any further discussion? Senator Schiffer.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and particularly in view of the state's financial situation, and I'm over on page 2, line 14. And we fund there an entity called the Energy Council. And I need someone to refresh my memory whether the Energy Council ever brought forth a bill or even had input to a bill. And as I recall, they compute that by the number of members that go to those meetings. And I think we send, I think, 6 from the Senate and 6 from the House. And what would be the savings if we just sent 2 smart people from the Senate and adjusted the appropriation? Can somebody give me some guidance and tell me the bills that have arisen as a result of that stalwart organization?
Senator Hines.
Mr. Chairman, I can answer part of his questions. Due to our financial situation this last year, the Management Council voted to reduce our participation from 6 members down to 4. And that's where we were at under the current administration, I mean the current policy. I was on it for the first time this year, and I was the one that was eliminated to go to the meeting. So so perhaps we should rely on some of the members that has been involved in this council, that has served in Representative Wyoming as the president of this council, and maybe we have a couple of them here, but I know we have a couple currently on the executive council, and I'm sure they can give you better information on the work. But I do know that we reduced the number this current biennium.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I would raise a question with regard to the National Conference of State Legislatures. There's a $233,000 appropriation there, up from $219,000 2 years ago. Mr. Chairman, I was able to go to their annual meeting partly because another outfit produced a stipend that paid about half the cost, so the state wasn't stuck quite as badly. But that organization, Mr. Chairman, has become quite partisan. And one of the things it did there was pass a policy endorsing the national health care reform that was progressing through the House and the Senate at that time. And that's a departure for that organization. They have traditionally, in their lobbying, confined themselves to opposing unfunded mandates and seeking more flexibility with states. This time, they took a explicitly partisan position, at least in the healthcare area. And the result is that our dues wind up lobbying for that set of bills that our people do not like, by and large. And I think it was quite inappropriate. And they may have gotten the word that they shouldn't know to do that, but that's what they did. And I have some significant reservations about that organization. And in the past, in the health area, and by and large, I went to the meetings relating to the health area. In the past, they have been pretty careful in the presentations that they make during these meetings to have a pretty good balance between liberal and conservative points of view. And I found this time the balance seemed to be between the extreme liberal and the moderate liberal. And more conservative points of view were not presented. And that organization has had quite a driftward to the left. And we do have some members, I think some members from the House that are participating there may have some influence in correcting things. The vice chair in the House now on the health committee, something I chaired a number of years ago. I think there's another member from the House that's on their large-scale governing committee. I forget exactly what it's called. But I'm becoming quite concerned with the NCSL and the more partisan overtone that I'm seeing with that organization. And I'm wondering whether it is appropriate to continue with that organization. I'm wondering whether it's appropriate to pay the full dues as to what might be the best way to handle that. But I'm quite concerned with what's going on there.
Senator Coe.
Mr. Chairman, just to answer the questions about the Energy Council, the $64,000 you see there, that's the standard due structure for all 12 states and 5 Canadian provinces. I do think, however, that the good senator from Johnson County might have a good amendment if we just send two smart people from the Senate and nobody from the House. As somebody said on this floor, he had a good amendment 2 years ago, and he might have another good one here. Actually, I think the Energy Council is very worthwhile, and I attend all their meetings. They have great dialogue on transmission, something that plagues this state all the time with debate, natural gas, other things. I would hope we would support this, but that $64,000 is the standard due structure for all 12 states.
Senator Burns.
So, Mr. Chairman, as I understand it then, regardless of whether we send four from each house or six from each house, it's still the $64,000 for the dues. I was wondering, so this is all just dues on page two to NCSL and so forth. This is not the expenses for sending the legislators to these meetings, as I understand it, just so everybody's clear on that. Mr. Chairman, I was wondering if somebody could clear up for me on page 2, line 17, what the registration fees are.
Senator Hyde, Mr. President.
Mr. Chairman, registration fees are those that any conference we go, I think it's in or out of state, there's a lot of times there are registration fees. All of these national groups that we go to, it's usually $300 to $500, and that is what that $85,000 is. If the staff puts in this number, and they said it was down $6,000, mainly because there was few members attending them. Occasionally, you'll get invitations, and they'll will not require the registration fee, but in most cases, you pay a registration fee, and in addition to the dues, and this is what put on that conference.
the travel and per diem and things is all in a different column. This is just this annual dues are strictly dues. You will notice the last few months that I know I have, and I'm sure you have, that in some of these conferences they're willing to forego the registration, or else they're willing to pay you so much to go towards your travel. And I think basically because people are not attending it. States don't have the money, and there's probably other states that have strict restrictions on travel, like we did at one time. At one time, we wasn't allowed to go, or if you went, you was given $500, and if you didn't want to get by on that, you had to pay the rest yourself.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just in brief response to, I think, the very appropriate comments from the gentleman from Natrona County, I'm speaking not for the Management Council, but as a member of Management Council. So I asked some questions in regard to this NCSL that we see here in our last Management Council, and my questions weren't nearly along the lines of the partisanship, but although I sense that and I see that, but the questions I had in regard to the amount of service that we get, or so to speak, bang for our buck in regard to that organization compared to the one on line 15. And the answer that I got there is we get a considerable amount of service from the NCSL, in that they help us with our training of our new legislators and whatnot. But I would say as a member, and again not speaking for the council, that what the concern that you raised might be an appropriate item for our agenda in our final Management Council meeting, and it would be a good time, I think, to hear your further concerns with that. In regard to this amount, I'll leave that to your judgment as to how you would want to do that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And a couple other comments on the Energy Council. And in my other life, when I was down at the other end of the hall, I had an opportunity to chair that, and my colleague from Park County also did. But there are three components of it. There's the legislative branch, and these 12 states that are involved in it, energy is very important to them, as well as in terms of jobs, revenues to the state, and how much they produce. There's also a component that is a private sector that my colleague from Park County had the opportunity to chair. And then the other component is the university side, where we learn a lot about technology. And the thing that's the opportunity we have, and we, at least the meetings I've gone to, is to get a flavor and understand the whole market conditions that exist in the North American continent. And we are a world-class state in terms of the energy we produce. But when you look at the markets in this whole continent, North American, you get a feel and a flavor of what's happening with prices, with scenarios that deal with our state and the price of commodities. They're a very well-run, lean organization. You can see that the dues are only $64,000. I would hope this body would allow us to continue to participate in that. I think it brings back a lot of valuable information to this body and the legislature and how we deal with revenues and our commodities.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I, too, would speak in support of the Energy Council. I know of no topic that is probably more important from the revenue standpoint than energy. I know of none. They produce an awful lot of it. I've been to a lot of their meetings. Do we bring back bills? They don't do. They're not in the bill business. Quite frankly, I wish either CSG or NCSL were not in the bill business after some of the proposed bills I see that come back from them. It's an education for those people who attend. Quite often it's those who are associated with bills that may come through to the legislature with regard to international, and it is international. A lot of the Canadian provinces are members, and even some in South America. And I think it gives those people who attend a very good insight into what's going on in the energy business internationally and what we should be doing as a state in order to properly respond to the demand or lack of demand for energy. And it is a low dues. How many people are sent? That's another issue. But as far as the dues go, I strongly support it.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, we struggle with this not only in this budget, but with other budgets throughout the government. If you sit down and look at the dues that we pay to various national organizations, it's actually sobering. If you go to the governor's budget, you'll look and you'll see that we pay to be part of the national governance conferences. We pay for the National Conference of Uniform State Laws, you know, the NACUSL, all those statutes everybody pulls up. They don't come for free. And every time I go through those things, it's actually discouraging, because some of the things that we see is our colleague from Casper talks about is because we simply don't have the time to take advantage of some of these things. So as I look at the periodicals that come from these various organizations, they're generally staffed by folks that legislators that are full-time legislators. And I'm pleased when we see legislators among our group that have more time to spend, that they're actually participating. It's great. I love it when I see our colleagues on those committees. It's easier for me to vote on items that where we know that we're paying dues that go into organizations that have common ground with us, like the Energy Council, like the Mountain West states, because you know that if you're not there, your colleagues that from the other states are probably going to be voting your interests. We are a part-time legislature. We won't have the same participation in some of these groups, but you can choose to be an isolationist so that your colleagues can't even show up. Say, well, that cost of doing business is that we want to pay the invitation, we want to pay the admission fee so that when our colleagues do have the opportunity, they can go. And then finally, I would just say, remember, as we talk about this, we're talking about it in context of a $2.9 billion budget. And I don't want to say that every dollar is not important. But in context of what all the things we do, this is a really small part of our budget, and it provides access for some of us who have the time to go participate and learn at a national level that they wouldn't otherwise provide, if you don't have anything else to do, I guess.
Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Anderson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 2, say aye. Opposed, no. Senate File 2 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader. You heard the motion. All those in favor? Opposed?
The reports.
February the 17th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 61, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Massey, C. Meyer, Nicholas Peterson, and Townsend, Senator Nicholas, Chairman. February the 17th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 68, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, S. Meyer, Ross in session, excuse, Senator Perkins, Senator Ross, Chairman. Do pass amended. February the 17th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 65, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye. Senators Burns, Esmeyer, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions. Senator Ross, Chairman. February the 17th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 66, reports back with a recommendation that Aye, Senators Massey, C. Meyer, Nicholas Peterson, and Townsend. Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that the Senate be at recess until 2 p.m.
Announcements. You've heard the motion that the Senate be in recess until 2 p.m. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate is recessed until 2 p.m.